This is Dissecting Dragons, a speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers by writers and readers.
Hello, and welcome to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast for writers and readers. I'm Madeline Vaughan.
And I'm Jules Ironside. This week, Crowning Glory, the significance of hair in myth and speculative fiction. And this one was suggested by Madeline, who randomly sent me a text saying, how about we do an episode on hair? And I was like, what? Because I needed a bit more context than that.
Yeah. Hair? And she was like, excuse me? It seemed to come out of nowhere. But basically, I was just... I'd been speaking to a mutual friend of ours, Amelia, who has the most beautiful, ridiculously long hair. It just goes on and on. And she was having it cut. She was talking about the fact that so many people, when she'd said, I'm having my hair cut, freaked out.
Was she just having it trimmed?
Yeah, she was. She was just having the ends taken off. But everyone was just like, you're what? You're what? And everyone became incredibly protective of her very, very long hair, including myself, because I love her hair. I just think it's gorgeous. And I guess I started thinking, why that is? Why do we have this knee-jerk reaction? And I kind of sort of started looking a little bit at some of the history and the mythos and some of the traditions, and I thought, wow, actually, there's quite a lot here. And I think it would be worth debating this in an episode. I didn't convey this properly to Jules. I just went, hair!
And I think we were in the middle of another conversation at the time, so I was just like, what? The hell yeah. Are you talking about?
Completely blindsided her. I swear this will make more sense as we go on. It does seem like a very, very random topic, but I do actually think that there is quite a lot for us to talk about.
Yes, there definitely is. So without further ado, I'm going to look at some of the folklore and it sort of veers into religion territory, traditions that are associated with hair. For example, in the Sikh religion, long, clean, well-combed hair is one of the five articles of faith. So they tend to wear their hair long.
Yeah.
And then if you go to the Cree people of Native America, hair was considered to be part of the soul. And cut hair was buried, you know, like you would inter a human corpse because it was considered to be part of the soul. The Sioux people of Native America sort of went a bit further with this as well, and they only cut their hair during times of mourning, which I think is quite common to a number of other different cultures, in fact.
Yeah, absolutely. There's also evidence that there may have been, and again, we can't necessarily confirm this, but there may have been cases of shaving hair in Egypt as well, in ancient Egypt too.
Yeah. Victorian England, a bit of a leap from Native America, I realise, a woman's hair was considered to show her fertility. So it was a big thing during Victorian England to have very, very long, very thick, lustrous hair of whatever colour, it didn't really matter. But, you know, obviously things like very, very dark hair, very, very light hair were both universally admired, whereas red hair and red hair with its poor associations, which we'll come into later. Red
yes.
hair and just ordinary medium brown hair were just sort of a bit, no, we're not really fussed on that. But that was a genuine belief, and it was hard for people who had naturally quite thin, fine hair, who couldn't grow it beyond sort of, say, brushing the top of their shoulders, to have these wondrous braids of long hair looped around their heads. So that was difficult for them. But they really did kind of fetishize the whole thing. And
yeah.
There is this an account of, you know, Charlotte Bronte had always really, really wanted really lovely, long, thick hair. but hers was quite fine and thin and tended to break easily at a certain level. So she purchased a false hair piece, which were generally made of horse hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it might have been a good, you know, it was all sort of braided and then you sort of put it up on your head along with your natural hair. And it looked like you had a lot more hair than you actually had. So it's kind of like padding for the head, as it
were. Yeah, extensions.
Yes, but I mean, obviously it was just a single long braid piece. Unfortunately, yeah. The hair did not match hers colour-wise. And when she met her publisher for the first time, she took off her hat and her coat. And then he said, oh, did she not want to take off her other hair piece? And of course, the thing was, it should have been considered to be part of her natural hair, and the fact that it obviously wasn't and he'd mistaken it for some sort of like extra bit of hat really upset her, and she burst into tears. So I mean, that's how serious it was taken. Somebody who was that sensible and that intelligent, in case it's like, no, actually I've only really got thin hair and you've noticed it now. It's kind of like pointing out, well, you don't have the fashionable size for breasts, do you? Which is basically what it came down to. So that little aside, then we'd go up to Lancashire, where burning a piece of your hair is supposed to show how long you would live. If the flame that came off the hair was very, very bright, you were supposed to live a long time. And this is one I haven't heard of, but apparently this is a common English folklore tradition. Cutting your hair during a gibbous or waxing moon is supposed to bring good luck. I will tell you that if you cut your hair during a gibbous or waxing moon, it will grow back quicker because your nails and your hair grow quicker during a waxing moon. People don't want to believe this, but they have actually scientifically proven it to be true.
But what? What?
I don't know. You've just got to think about things like, nobody knows why, but you've got to think about things like the way the moon affects bodies of water, and it obviously affects the human psyche as well. And we're like 80% water. So, for all we know, for some reason it makes our nails and our hair grow quicker. Bizarre.
Good to know.
We go to Scotland. This is one I really like. Sailors' wives braided their hair at night in order to catch storms. The idea was that unbraided hair caused strong storms at sea, and obviously they didn't want that when their husbands were out fishing or sailing.
I love it because it's so very obviously meant to be... while your men are out, women, we want you to be proper and and modest. You know, you don't attract the eye of anybody else. So unless you braid your hair, you're going to have murdered your husband.
But there is a strong tradition of things like plaiting love knots into your hair, or plaiting weather into your hair, or into knots of rope and things like that. There's a long body of witchcraft type lore there, whereby you are supposed to be able to catch winds within rope or within hair. So it does feed into that as well. But yeah, I agree. It is a kind of like, yeah, I don't want you to let your hair down while I'm out, darling.
And it is actually interesting, you know, speaking of witchcraft, because hair, as well as blood, can be used in spellcraft and has been used in different spells and different beliefs for a very, very long time. And I do really find that interesting because it is equal to blood.
Yeah, many, many modern witches and Wiccans tend to have long hair. They don't tend to cut their hair. It's supposed to be a symbol of strength and spirituality. And there is the old-time witchcraft belief, which turns up in various grimoires and things like that, whereby if you're a witch, you don't cut your hair because that's where your strength comes from. Obviously, that has roots in other stories, which we will come to in due course. But
yeah, so basically, has, you know, been the subject of beliefs, which relate not just to beauty, fertility, but also to spirituality and to magic as well.
Yeah, and there's a few more, actually. This one's great. This is another English one. If a magpie steals your cut hair, you will die within a year.
Whew!
We're a cheerful lot. Lithuania. Yeah, I've really gone far afield. Lithuanian custom has it that headaches are caused by cut and thrown away hair being collected by birds and used in nests.
Oh, that's...
In which case, I must have hordes of birds out there building nests out of my hair.
It's what you get for having red hair, Jules. It just attracts the sunlight. The birds are like, ooh, that'll look nice in my nest. They're interior decorating. And now you've got perpetual headaches.
Another Lithuanian custom is to soak your hair in the first rain of May for it to grow long, lustrous and strong.
See, that is, it's a really interesting thing because, again, it's this emphasis on long hair.
Yes, long hair being to do with, you know, strength, fertility. In East Asia, for example, long hair is associated with youth and beauty. China, cutting your hair at the new year is a complete no-no because that's, you're cutting your chances for prosperity.
Yeah.
And you're not supposed to wash your hair at New Year there either in case you wash all the luck away. I mean, to me, that's almost sort of Irish logic in terms of stuff you're not supposed to do with your hair. That I can hear my gran in my head saying, well, you don't hold a horseshoe that way up because all the luck will drop out. And I can hear her saying, if you eat your crust, you'll get lovely long curly hair. In fairness, I did eat all my crusts. I wouldn't say my hair's curly, but it's definitely very wavy. It has curly moments.
There you go, then. It's all truth.
I think it would have happened. That was one of the most fun conversations I've ever not been a part of, but got to witness, was when I was a child, and both my grands were staying at Christmas, and, you know, one Scottish grandmother, one Irish grandmother, and both of them arguing about where my red hair came from. It's our side of the family.
What, is it like they were trying to claim it?
Yes.
Wow.
The thing is, if you go back with my ancestors on either side, you will find redheads on both sides of the family. Far back either.
I mean, genetically, it's very possible that the fact that there was red hair on both sides was what allowed you to have red hair to begin with.
Well, yeah, it's caused by a recessive gene allele, so the likelihood is that it came from both. It came from both. It's all that Celtic blood. Yes, so it is really interesting. In a complete converse, then also we have Buddhism, whereby a shaved head shows that someone is part of the Shangra, or spiritual community.
Hmm.
I don't know if that's part of a whole sort of eschewing vanity type thing, but...
Yeah. I do wonder about that as well. I don't know whether this is true or whether I got it from a book, a piece of fiction. But, you know, it was literally something about being closer to nature by having bare skin or something along those lines. And that's not necessarily to do with... that might be just total New Age rock. And I didn't know, because, yeah, I think I read an article about someone who was saying that that's why they did it. And I don't know whether they were doing that as a representation of a particular faith or whether that was just their own personal kind of feel.
Yeah.
But yeah, it always struck me as peculiar because I just thought that, you know, how do you peel off your skin to be closer to nature as well? Like, hair is a part of you. It's not so...
So that's just made me think of St. Francis of Assisi, who declared his conversion to the Christian faith by ripping all his clothes off and running naked into the wilderness, clad only in his hair and his beard.
Good job, man.
And there's an awful lot of Christian martyrs and Christian hermits and things who were supposed to just sort of roam the wilderness with really, really long beards and really long hair and not much in the way of clothing.
Yeah, and actually... But correct me if I'm wrong, Jules, there is actually a section in the Bible or in some of the original scripture which forbades men from shaving, or forbades shaving in general.
Yeah, I mean, if you go back to Leviticus, which is, you know, kind of a health and safety for nomadic tribes, mm-hmm. is really how it probably should be read. And somewhere between thou shalt not sleep with a goat and thou shalt not sleep with another man, or if you must sleep with a goat, it must be a female goat kind of thing. Believe me, that is actually in there. There's things like you shouldn't wear clothes made of mixed fibres, and it's all part of that. And a lot of that is to do with the perceived hygienic lifestyle at the time. Yeah. There's a lot in there about sexually transmitted diseases as well. But yeah, you're right. There is a case of you ought to be going back to God in the state that God intended you to live.
Yeah. Means that you don't shave. You let your hair grow naturally. So yeah, there's a lot to be said for it, and it is quite interesting in that respect. And it's also interesting, actually, the value that we put and we have continued to put on hair. Possibly because it's also the only real part of our body which is easy to sell. For instance, in Les Misérables,
yeah,
there is a whole section where Fantine, she's become a prostitute, but the full depth of despair doesn't really happen to her until she's been shaved.
Well, I mean, she doesn't actually become a prostitute to start with. The way it goes is she sells her hair, which is beautiful.
Yeah.
Because I think the line goes, Fantine's fortune was in gold and pearls, but the gold was the gold of her hair and the pearls were the pearls of her teeth. She sells her hair and she thinks, well, you know, hair will grow back. But she's so desperate for money to send for the care of her child that she then sells her front teeth. And that was a practice in 18th century France and Britain, whereby, obviously, the aristocrats used to eat a lot of sugar. They didn't have dental hygiene. They'd lose their teeth. And so they would pay poor people who had good dentition for their teeth. They'd extract the teeth and try pushing them into their own sockets, and they'd stay for a day or two and then sort of lose them. So they'd have teeth added for a ball, as it were. So she sells her teeth. And then after that, she thinks, well, I may as well sell everything else as well, and becomes a prostitute.
All right, yeah, sorry, I got it the wrong way around. But regardless, there's still this kind of, this level of descent, as it were.
Which is really interesting because, as we will later discuss, and as we've mentioned before, long hair on a woman is a sign of virtue.
Yeah.
So Victor Hugo was quite definitely saying, as you've just said, Madeline, that there is a descent here. She first sells her hair and the rest is following. So he's kind of preparing the reader.
Yeah. Further to this, with this long hair, there was also this, you know, this history of young women, their hair loose, to show the fact that they were virgins and unmarried. But once you had been married, or once you got to a certain age, in some cultures it might have been to do with menstruation, in others it might have been to do with being married and losing one's virginity. That you no longer wore your hair down or long, or not necessarily long, but you no longer wore it down, you would wear it up. If the prevailing beliefs behind that haven't remained, it was still a fashion choice, which one would see later on, where you saw young girls who would have their hair down, and it wouldn't really be considered appropriate for a girl to have her hair up. If they were young children, you know, not in the same manner in which that you'd have adults who'd have their hair up. It was that was specifically an adult style, and it was, you know, to do with maturity, and it was moving away from innocence. So you didn't want to see a young child with that kind of hairstyle because that just wasn't appropriate.
No, I mean, a bit of random research that I stumbled across whilst doing research for my current historical fiction novella series during the 14th century, a woman wearing her hair loose was signalling that she was sexually available. So quite often prostitutes were wearing their hair loose.
Yeah.
As the young maidens were also, they tended to plait their hair, not just leave it completely loose. But they leave it uncovered, and as you said, Madeline, that was signalling that they were available for marriage, not for more sort of negotiable delights, shall we say?
Yes,
that had a price tag.
Yeah, but yeah, the six styles where things would be, your hair would be piled on top of your head. You'd be wearing hats or certain kinds of, you know, headgear or headgear makes it sound like they're popping helmets on.
But, you know, that basically is what it was. It was headgear, you know, various like horns and cornets and
When you say horns, now I'm just imagining all these Victorian women with like devil horns in.
I'm still in medieval England.
I know what you mean. Just like a, oh, Margaret, what lovely horns. Yes, thank you. We took them from a goat. I feel like Lucifer himself. Oh,
I
that's what I'm
bet there was a
imagining now.
hot 5 minutes where someone did try to sell that because they put everything else on their bloody hats.
Yeah. It gets to a certain point when you're like, actually, in an ultra-religious society, possibly putting horns on is not the greatest idea.
Anyway, let's follow this into sort of, well, I suppose various stories. A good one for us to look at, having just recently talked about the Bible, is obviously Samson and Delilah.
Yes.
Samson was a great warrior of the Hebrews. He allegedly killed 100 men, 100 Philistines, with the jawbone of an ass. To be honest, even if he killed 10 men with the jawbone of an ass, that's still pretty impressive. He was supposed to
Good
be
job, Samson.
this really, this really, really strong. You get the impression that he was like the real specimen of manhood amongst the Hebrews.
Yeah, he really was. I mean, he also he killed a lion, which attacked him. And then, if I believe correctly, when he came back along to see the lion carcass, bees had made a hive inside the lion carcass, and he just stuck his hand right in there and just
Took the
stole a
honey.
bunch of honey, which is it, that's like next level. Just bunch of bees, never mind. I'm just
That
gonna
is kind
take
of
this
hardcore.
honey.
But yes, and he attributed his great strength to the fact that he did not cut his hair. He had
Yeah.
long hair, and the entire story ultimately is is one about not putting your faith in the things of this earth. Because his strength came from God, it didn't come from his hair. But in his head, his vanity and his arrogance over his strength and everything, it never occurred to him that he could be brought low by someone who was physically weaker than him. Enter Delilah, a great beauty, catches Samson's eye, sent by the Philistines, who are fed up of Samson killing a lot of them. And she charms him into telling him the secret, telling her rather, the secret of him. Well, I suppose we don't really know, but we're assuming this Delilah is a woman for the sake of the story right
Yes.
now. Into telling her the secret of his great strength. And see, I would be suspicious if I was Samson. I wouldn't be, hey, pretty lady, why do you want to? Oh, I'll tell you. Let me tell you about the time when I killed the lion. And by the way, it's down to my hair. And now I'm going to go to sleep and leave you with these scissors, which is kind of how it always comes across to me.
Even better yet, as he's going to sleep, she's just holding the scissors. What are those for? Nothing.
Nothing, nothing.
Okay.
You go to sleep, my love. That kind of thing. You've quite worn me out. Blah blah blah. All the sweet words, as it were. And she cuts his hair. Samson wakes up to a haircut that he obviously doesn't like very much. He's like, "Oh, woe is me! All my strength is gone." And he is caught by the Philistines, who blind him because that's what you do with your enemies. Great book, the Bible. And he's paraded on one of their holy days, and he's chained between two pillars to be mocked by the crowds.
Yeah.
And at that last moment, in the moment of his greatest despair, Samson prays to God and realizes that he's put his faith in the wrong things. His strength and his physical prowess came from God. It doesn't matter that he's now sightless or whatever. He has all his enemies around him, and God grants him one last great act of strength. And Samson pulls down the two great pillars of the temple and buries the Philistines under piles and piles of stone.
Which is great, because I'm sure there were families there as well.
Yeah.
We literally had nothing.
But yeah, anyway, that is the story, and the moral would seem to be sort of don't get so up yourself that you can't you think that someone far physically weaker than you couldn't take you down.
Yeah. It's also, I, because again, you've studied the Bible much more than me. I think I also know another version, which is that his strength was in his hair because the Lord had told him not to cut it. And it was the fact that he gave up the secret to a woman when, you know, he'd been, you know, this was a gift from the Lord, and he just disregarded it so easily, and did not and was not cautious, and that's what allowed him to be caught. But as I said, you've studied the Bible more than me, so your version is probably accurate.
The thing is, there's various different versions of the Bible, and it's open to interpretation. So yeah, there might be that version. I think it was kind of like God told him to not cut his hair as a symbol of his strength, and Samson took that to mean, oh, well, my strength is in my hair then.
Yeah.
I don't think Samson was that bright, ultimately.
No, but I mean, like, sticking your hand straight into a beehive isn't that bright. I mean, they say he did it. The after effects. Maybe he just got stung to shit and was really upset about it. They just decided not to tell that part of the story. They were like, yes, look how brave he is sticking his hand in a beehive, instead of look how dumb he is sticking his hand into a beehive.
Yes. Moving away to Italy and the original legend Petrescinella, which became better known to us by the Brothers Grimm as Rapunzel.
Yes. Now, Rapunzel's a funny one. Because they sort of explain the long hair in other modern adaptations like Tangled, but Rapunzel itself as a story is quite peculiar and does really put in that emphasis of the long hair being a quality of virginity and innocence. Now, in this case, for those who are not familiar with the story of Rapunzel, which I'm sure is pretty much nobody, a witch basically negotiates the kidnap of a... I say the kidnap. A pregnant mother orders her husband to go and steal from a witch's garden. Not a great idea. The witch says, all right, I won't kill you, but I'm going to take your child instead. So they think, all right, that's reasonable. They give over this child, who is named Cabbage, after what was attempted to be stolen, so Rapunzel, where she is locked in a tower where the only entrance is through this window, and the only way to get in or out is if Rapunzel lets down her hair, which has been allowed to grow to an extraordinary length. Now, this leaves a lot of questions, because, you know, she must have been a baby first, and it must have taken a long time for her hair to grow that length. So I don't know what the witch did in the meantime. But regardless, somehow, the only way in or out was with this luxuriously long hair. Now, what happens is that Rapunzel is there. She's singing. She's having a nice time of it. I say nice time of it. She's a captor. Not a captor, rather. She's a captive. A prince here. She lets down her hair, he comes up and joins her, and they're boink. And this continues to happen, and they continue to have sex and seem to really enjoy themselves. And it's actually one of the only Grimm Brothers stories where the female character isn't horrifically punished for having sex. In fact, the prince is the one who kind of gets a bit more punished, really. And you know that Rapunzel clearly is enjoying this activity, because she does keep letting down her hair for him.
Yeah.
So what happens is the witch finally figures out that someone's been a-visiting when Rapunzel's clothes literally get too tight because she's pregnant. At which point the witch cuts all of Rapunzel's hair off, uses it to lure the prince up, where she proceeds to push him out of the window into a bush of brambles, where he's blinded. And he stumbles around. Rapunzel is cast out of the tower as well, and while she's standing there singing, the prince finds her, and they both live happily ever after, except of course he's been blinded by thorns. But as I say, she actually kind of gets off quite well. She somehow manages to escape her captor by getting pregnant. But the significant thing here is the fact that once she is pregnant, her hair is cut, this long hair, which was the symbol of for her, and even a symbol of childhood, has been cut away, and it's meant to be shame.
Yes, obviously, as you say, the cutting of the hair is the loss of virtue.
Yeah,
I thought that she ended up having to wander in the wilderness looking for a father for her unborn children, because she has twins, and when she does find him, she cries on his eyes, and it washes the thorns out.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I didn't remember that
No,
version.
well, I, to be fair, there's probably several different versions. I mean, the original Petrescinella is very, very, very weird. I mean, it makes the grim version look kind of like okay, really. There's dark stuff. There's human sacrifice. Yeah, just look it up sometime. Anyway, as you say, the significant thing is the cutting of the hair once the witch realizes that her captive is pregnant. My big question mark of that story is why does he keep climbing up to the tower to have sex with her and then not take her with him?
Well,
Why
see
does he
this.
never bring any rope with him?
Well, see, this is the thing. I actually talked about this with my class, and obviously, all fairy tales are trying to teach a lesson. And I wonder actually whether the lesson isn't to her, but to him, because he's really the one who receives punishment. And she does to a certain degree as well. You know, she agrees to this relationship without any assurance of. You know what will happen, which means that for a while she's in trouble there of not being able to provide these kids with a father, which puts her in a very precarious position as well. But for him, I think it's because he didn't actually really want to marry her. I think he was just there to have fun because he is a prince as well, which means that conceivably he could have gone home and been like, "Hey, this woman in a tower. I'm gonna just take a few soldiers with me and we're just gonna break her out, okay?" Oh, yeah, you're right. He could have maybe just brought some rope, but he didn't want to because he didn't actually want to take responsibility for her. He was just trying to have fun. And it's this blind, desire in him, which put her in such a precarious position, which also ended in him literally being blinded. And actually, the only thing that saved him was then her presence, where, as you say in this version, because I always thought he just remained blind and that was his, humility and that he kind of had to learn to sort of depend on her a little bit and sort of learn to be a better person. But actually, yeah, it also kind of makes sense that, the only thing that could save him was her love.
Yes. Let me wash the thorns out of your eyes with my tears so that you can see your twin bastards. I've got you now. Even if you don't marry me, you have to acknowledge them.
You have exactly. So I always think that that's what was going on, and that the lesson is about him. He is the one who has done the wrong thing, and is therefore the one who faces the consequences, and is therefore the one that the lesson is kind of geared toward, which is that yeah, having if there are intentions. Then he should have saved her first. He should have married her first, and then none of the problems would have happened in the first place.
Yes. I'm going to talk about one which is certainly the person in it is a true historical figure. Whether this story is true, I don't know. It's kind of achieved the level of urban legend and it's almost 1,000 years ago now, so
Okay.
chances of getting confirmation difficult. I'm going to talk about the Countess Lady Godiva or Godgifu of Mercia, who, after the Norman conquest, was one of the few women who actually retained a large estate. She was the wife of Leofric, Earl of Mercia, and she rode through the streets of Coventry naked in order to get her husband to remit the taxes that were a sore burden to her people. Now, you're kind of like, hang on, how do those two things go together? Basically, she felt bad for the people of Coventry, and she kept saying to her husband, look, you cannot keep taxing them like this. And the Kingdom of Mercia had a long history at that point of overtaxing people because Harold Godwinson's brother Tostig had been Earl of Mercia previously, and he had overtaxed the people to the point where they had revolted against him, and Harold had appointed I think it was a cousin in his stead. Obviously, after the Norman conquest, it was only going to be people that William was confident weren't going to raise an army against him. So you had Godgifu and her husband Leofric, and she kept saying, look, you cannot keep taxing them like this. People are starving. And she asked him again and again and again, till he got so annoyed he turned round and said, yes, if you ride through the streets naked, perhaps I'll consider it. So she took him at his word, and sent word round saying, could everybody please stay indoors and shut up their windows? And then she mounted her horse naked and rode through the streets, which cannot have been at all comfortable. But she let down her long hair, and her hair was so long it covered most of her anyway. And in paintings and things, generally she's given either red or gold hair, as you perhaps would associate with a Saxon or a Saxon lady. One person decided that seeing the lady in all her naked glory on a horse was worth the price, and looked out at her, and God struck him blind for his blasphemy, which is where we get the term Peeping Tom. But anyway, it did win, apparently, a tax remission for her people. Yeah. Now, the actual historical circumstances are accurate, but whether she rode naked through the streets of Coventry, I don't know, and nobody really does. It does, however, make for a good story.
It certainly does.
And once again, you have the long hair covering her nakedness, long hair and a woman signifying virtue.
I guess that, you know, there is actually literally a link to, what's the right word? I've just forgotten how to English, Jules.
Can't help you there.
Modesty. There we go.
Yes.
And certainly within paintings, whenever you have a woman who is meant to be, modest or beautiful, you have this long hair which covers her more private bits.
Yes, that's another interesting thing, particularly if you look at, say, the Romantics and the paintings of the Renaissance. Mm-hmm. Women with a slightly reddish tint to their hair, those painters added that red hair. I mean, you'll see all those paintings of the Virgin Mary. We're pretty sure she wasn't white, and she certainly probably didn't have red hair. But she's portrayed that way because red hair signified royalty and a royal line, which I won't go into too much, but it does show. And we can probably take 5 minutes to talk about some of the ridiculous assertions around red hair.
Yeah, hair colour is definitely something that we should definitely be touching on. And is absolutely very is a very interesting topic. Now, the thing against red hair is almost undoubtedly linked to anti-Semitism.
Yeah.
Where it was believed that red hair was a trait of the Jewish people. So that's great. Everything's anti-Semitic, really. All bigoted beliefs are anti-Semitic in their seem to be anti-Semitic in their history. So that's wonderful. She said very sarcastically.
It is also associated with witchcraft, which is...
It is, very much associated with witchcraft.
A lot of it had to do with the fact that, again, you had the Virgin Mary constantly portrayed with red hair, and when you got new movements of Christianity, like the Church of England, for example, the Puritan movement specifically, the Huguenots, who all got rid of kind of iconoclasty. So they got rid of the paintings of the saints and the Virgin Mary and the little statues and, you know, everything that kind of was a bit decorative or Catholic.
Yeah.
So a woman with red hair at those particular times was kind of made a bit of an outcast, because she was apparently portraying with her very person something that was essentially iconoclasty. It deviated from the adoration of God.
Yes. I also think that there might be another link in as well, which is that Saxon and Norman, as you said previously, red hair is something which was linked with the Saxon people.
Yeah.
And we know what happened to the Saxon people. A certain guy you might have heard, William the Conqueror, sort of arrived, and the Normans kind of took over, and there was this massive conflict between the Saxons and the Normans, and almost without fail, propaganda which moved against a people would have, you know, been spread and used in the same way that the Normans took over the Arthurian myths and kind of reshaped them for their own means, basically every invader, and we've had a lot of them, every invader in England has ever done.
Yeah.
They've kind of just taken over the myths, but they've also will have taken certain traits and associations and will have connected them with bad things. So red hair with witchcraft, which again is only going to be linked in with red hair being part of Judaism, because Jewish people and witches were kind of often sort of lumped together, particularly in the sort of the early Renaissance period, and you know, when we're going in towards James the First and things like this, there was this general kind of hatred regardless, and so all of the bad in inverted commas people were all kind of lumped together, and it was just that's how you identify them. So you can identify a witch by picking out qualities which we also attribute to Judaism as well.
Yeah, and I think some of it
the
was
bad person.
some of it was just general difference as well.
Yes.
But,
yeah.
And I hate to say it, but the red hair was also associated with the Scottish and the Irish.
Yes.
Who, again, I did some family research recently, just because I was supposed to be testing out something at the library. And it turned out that a whole bunch of my Scottish ancestors happened to be down in the Dorset area and were arrested and held in Dorchester prison for loitering. Rough translation, they were arrested for hanging around and being Scottish. So... Yeah, this was during the late 18th century. So once again, you know, it's only a fairly recent thing where it's okay to be Scottish. We all jibe at each other, but it's okay to be sort of Scottish or Irish or whatever. So the English didn't really love it. The English, for someone who was conquered again and again and again all the way up to 1066, they really didn't like strangers that much, possibly because of this. And obviously there's the link with the Celtic people as well. But there are some very bizarre beliefs around red hair, even today, and I've encountered some of them. For example, we're supposed to be more bad-tempered or fiery.
I think that's probably linked with the Celtic side of things.
Yeah, I agree with that. We're supposed to be absolute sexual maniacs. I've had something similar to that said to me many, many times, and certainly as a teenager and in my early 20s, it was a case of, oh, I love your hair, let's go to bed kind of thing, assuming that I'd automatically be up for it. I got an awful lot of that, which was great in some respects, in the sense that I got to then say exactly what I thought. I didn't have to be nice to this person because they just said something that dickish. I could let my inner bitch out.
Good. Jesus Christ.
But even now, I'll still occasionally get something like that, and I'm just like, what the fuck is wrong with you? But one of the funniest things I've heard, and it obviously dates back to Ireland during a time when people used to bring animals into the house during the winter, was that if your child is born with red hair, then there was a pig under the bed during conception. So I'm like, have you ever seen a pig? They're ginormous. Pigs are huge. How could you be blinking away, creating a child, and not notice that a pig had gone under the bed? Those were not high beds.
That's so peculiar.
It's so bizarre. Anyway, there's a whole list of them, and I might just put them up on my redhead. Ah,
it's
I might
begun.
Just put them up on my blog at some point, because they are really, really funny. But yes, and then there are beliefs around other hair colour types as well. For example, the whole the dumb blonde stereotype, for example, or the blondes have more fun. Blondes have more fun was kind of cashed in on and expanded by people like Marilyn Monroe, who was a natural brunette, but fair enough. The idea that brunettes will be the first to die of their siblings.
Why?
I have no idea where that one's come from. I should look into it, really. And you're supposed to be more sensible.
Well, you are quite sensible.
Well, I'd like to think so. Anyway, so it's a weird thing. If you think about it, it's very, very weird that we as humans are essentially functionally hairless now. We don't have pelts that keep us warm. and yet we grow this weird little tuft of extra long fur off the top of our heads. So
yes.
What natural selection process prompted that? And it's most likely because it's essentially quite useless, no matter how lovely it might look or how many products you spend on it or how much time you do with your hair. It was probably some sort of mating display at some point in our history.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that there is probably a certain level of biology involved, which is that if you can take care of your hair, you know, if you've got long hair, which is thick and well cared for, you're probably getting, technically you should be, that you're probably getting the right amount of vitamins. You're also probably in prime, if you don't have grey in your hair, you're probably in prime breeding age. Okay, so there is a biological component as well, which is that, yeah, nice hair can actually be a physical sign of, yes, on a just a very basic biological level of, yes, this person can clearly is clearly healthy, which means that they can clearly provide for themselves, which means that they can provide for our young.
I mean, it's sad that it comes down to biology like that, but yeah, there is an element to that.
Yeah, and what gets me is the fact that we have now come to this kind of this conclusion that long hair is very feminine and that short hair is very male, and that we actually pay a lot of attention to our hair, a lot of cultural importance is put on our hair and the way that it is maintained, and the fact that racism and, you know, general misunderstanding and bigotry we perceive to be beautiful. For instance, the straightening of curly hair,
yeah,
is probably linked to racism against cultures with naturally curly hair or with natural ringlets. So people of African descent who have kinky or curly or even bushy kind of hair are often sort of, you know, told to straighten it. Styles like dreadlocks or plaits are often looked down on when these cultures wear them, but then you will get white people, other cultures outside of that, who will try it, and apparently that's absolutely fine. All I remember is that, yeah, having curly hair, I was just consistently told time and time again that I should straighten it in order to be beautiful, and that straight hair was the epitome of beauty. And of course, these curls come from a Mediterranean heritage. But I was quite lucky in that I was born with very, very straight hair, as was my mother, as was my brother. And my mother, when she was alive, had incredibly curly hair, and growing up, was curly hair. I wished for it. I longed for it. I ate all of my crusts during this. And when I hit puberty, it went curly. It was the same with my brother. It literally happened in the matter of months. It just went straight, straight, straight. Oh, and kind of just went ringlets. And that was that.
Yeah.
And so I got my wish. And then everyone was like, don't you want to straighten it? I'm like, no, I don't. This was what I wanted. I got it.
I think part of that is obviously when you sort of came along and when you were hitting your teens, the really good hair straighteners had been brought out, and it was the fashion to have your hair straightened, aside from any ethnic side of it. But when I was in my teens slightly before that, people at school were getting perms. They were getting their hair permed, and it was the thing to have your hair permed. And people kept saying to me, oh, I think you should cut your hair. I think you should put layers in it, and I think you should go and get a perm. And I was like, no, absolutely not. Because I knew damn well if I cut my hair, say, sort of up to my shoulders or jaw level, my hair will naturally form quite large loose ringlets.
Yeah.
And it is so unbelievably thick that, and there's no point me then saying, oh, well, I'll get it part shaved or whatever, because it just goes bushy. So that's part of the reason I keep my hair long. Obviously, the other reason is I'm terrified of hairdressers. So I like to go as little as possible. And it got ridiculous. I think it was January I went and had my hair cut. My hair had gone down, so it was something like 2.5 inches past my hips, which for a lady my age is probably not appropriate, or so I'm being told. And I said that to the hairdresser, and she's like, that's a load of bollocks. My mum's got way longer hair than me, and she's in her 60s. And I'm like, yeah, okay, high five. She was so nice. But yeah, I'd rather have it long and wavy when just curling a bit at the end than. But I honestly can't be asked to straighten my hair because it takes hours. It literally takes me hours.
Yeah. And I just think that it's a very silly thing to pressure someone into. And also it's a very, very silly thing to completely one style of beauty, particularly when it's almost always linked in with a white image.
Yeah.
A white Western image, and say, this is the epitome of beauty. This is the standard that all women should be applied to. And it completely disregards that we all have different ethnicities. We have different faces, different body types, different types, different styles, and that different things will suit different people, and that what we want may be different. And I just think it's really, really silly to say this is the only way to be beautiful, particularly because hair is very important. And you know, I've definitely cried when I've had my hair cut, because you know, when you spend a long time trying to sort of grow it long and then you see so much of it taken away, it can actually be deeply emotional. And you can actually put a lot of, especially when you're young, you can put a lot of your own feelings, not your own feelings, but, you know, a lot of feelings of your own value into your hair. But in particular, because unlike things like your eyes and your skin and your face type and the way you look, your hair is one part of you, physical part of you, that you have real easy control over. So I think it can be very intrinsically linked with identity.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Definitely. And, okay, on one hand, I'm all for, shall we say, cultural sharing, so I'm not going to say one hairstyle is just for one culture or whatever, but I do think you ought to know where it's coming from. And on the subject of dreadlocks, to be honest, Western hair doesn't really lend itself very well to them, as in it tends not to be able to clean them that well, whereas naturally sort of Afro-Caribbean type hair, it lends itself very well to things like dreadlocks. And I know people then cite, but the Vikings, but Shiva, but et cetera, et cetera. But the thing is, those hairstyles tended to be very specifically matted, and they were matted for a purpose, which is usually, I will not do anything with my hair. I will leave it in matted locks until I've avenged my brother's death or whatever, with the Vikings particularly. And then they'd shave the whole lot off. It was a ritual of purification. So, it's no good just citing, cherry-picking little bits of your own cultural heritage without fully understanding it, and then using that as an excuse to appropriate part of somebody else's, shall we say.
Yeah. And I am, you know, all for saying that whatever you want with your hair. My big problem comes with the fact that a hairstyle which has a very long, you know, history with a certain culture, when members of that culture wear that hairstyle, they find themselves being ridiculed.
Yeah.
They find themselves being compared to basic and often very insulting stereotypes. I believe there was actually an incident recently where a Black American star, and I can't remember whether she was a musician or an actress, she had recently gotten dreadlocks, which her father had them, and so she decided to do the same thing. And news reporters basically said, oh yeah, we can smell the weed on her.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And then Miley Cyrus also got dreadlocks, and the news reporters were talking about it, the same news reporters were talking about it entirely differently, saying how new and different the style was and things like that. And it's just not right. It's not right when any particular group of people can appropriate a hairstyle and be treated differently or a trend setter when you have a group of people who have literally been doing it for centuries and who this deeply embedded within their physical culture, you know, the way that they present themselves. So I think it's definitely something that we should think about. And things like braids, it's just incredibly important. So,
yeah, basically know where it's come from and understand both sides of a cultural argument before you get involved. Ultimately, yeah, but yes, I'm all for cultural sharing. I'm just not. We've covered this, and it's a sensitive topic. I have to say, it's slightly less of an issue over here in the UK, but we obviously do hear about it in America, and it's far more of one there because obviously specific hairstyles and things have been banned in the past.
And I think there have also been cases of, I think in the UK, and again, I can't cite who, but I'm almost certain that I've read of cases of boys who've been made to cut their hair in a very particular way or in a very particular style.
Yeah, it depends on the schools, doesn't it? Because some of them are I mean, okay, talking about my school, you were not allowed to wear your hair down at all. If you had long hair, it really needed to be tucked back.
Yeah.
And they were really strict about it, and they were very strict about, you know, you had to wear hair bands that actually were the school colours. Which sounds like a minor thing, but at the time, with a bunch of teenage girls, that was huge. That was, you cannot have hair of a particular kind. The nuns also did not like people with red hair. And they were the girls with red hair were singled out for, shall we say, slightly more spiritual guidance.
Yeah. Well, in Japan as well, schoolgirls are often not permitted to, well, in fact, almost all schoolgirls are not permitted to dye their hair.
Yeah.
And actually, children who are born with a naturally lighter hair can even be pressured into dyeing their hair so that they're more uniform.
Yeah.
Which is just, yeah, as I said, hair is a quality as well, so I'm not surprised that schools will also try to gain a general sense of control with that. I also kind of understand on school levels where you have lots of things like head lice, why you might say, girls, please tie your hair back.
please don't spread them around more than you can help.
So there is a practical side to it as well. But yeah, I just think that there is this misunderstanding. And its link to identity, whether that be self-identity or cultural identity.
Yes. Anyway, we have managed an entire hour talking about hair, which I would have scarcely believed possible when Madeline sent me that random message.
I told you!
But she was right, so we've done it. And that brings us to the end of this one.
It certainly does. Before we go, our Dissecting Dragons recommendation of the week, and Jules, I believe you've got one for us.
I haven't actually finished this book yet, so this is partial, if you like, but I'm recommending it based on the partial reading. It's Kings of the Wild by Nicholas Eames, and it's difficult to describe. It's fantasy, and it's a slightly dark high fantasy. There are all sorts of magical creatures living in this world, and it sort of takes the traditional stories of, you know, a band of knights going off and slaying a dragon, rescuing a princess, etc. And instead, you've got a band of retired mercenaries who are called on to go out on one last quest. And when I say they're retired, as in, think about, you know, rock stars or football heroes or whoever who have really come to their end of their careers. They're a bit long in the tooth for it now. They're old. They've got aches and pains and scars and things. They've settled down. They have families. They have fierce wives. And they're thinking about, you know, just finding a nice sort of little pub to run somewhere for their retirement. And then they're all pulled out of retirement to help one of the band of brothers. And it is full of really funny tongue-in-cheek references to D&D campaigning and things like that. And it is just, it's so much fun. It really is. And it takes a lot of the traditional fantasy tropes and sort of turns them on their head. So it's the first book in a series. The second one is already out. And I think I'm going to be reading that after this one. So try that, guys.
Well, on that note, guys, we'll say thanks very much for listening. And we'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah, thanks and goodbye.
Bye.
You've been listening to Dissecting Dragons, the speculative fiction podcast. You can follow our podcast at podbean.com or from iTunes. For more information, visit our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/dissectingreaders. Or check out our author websites at jaironside.com and madelinevaughan.com. Please note, no dragons were harmed during the making of this podcast.